Hello, I'm Larry Clark from Excelsior Music Publishing with another episode of From the Composer. And I'm excited today to be talking to composer Tyler R. Carey. Hi, Tyler. How's it going?
Hey, Larry. How are you?
Good. So talk to us a little bit about your background and how you got started in composition.
So I kind of fell into writing music after listening to a friend of mine come home from college and kind of show me that he was writing music. He's one of our composers now. His name's David Samuel. And we went to the same high school just a year or two apart. And he came home and he showed me this cool program, which was Finale. And he goes, look, I can write music on this. And he showed it to me. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I asked him, I said, can I do that too? And he said, yeah, sure. And sat down and kind of walked me through it. And then from that point, I just sat and wrote all the time. And it was awful, 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 awful music. But
how old were you?
It was ninth grade.
Oh, so wow. Okay.
Whatever that is nowadays, I don't know the age anymore.
Yeah, 14, 15, 14.
Yeah. So like I just wrote everything and anything I could. And, I did that for a while and didn't really have much success. Cause I'm sure you remember when you first start writing, you don't really want to show anybody.
Right.
It's a little nerve wracking. And so I made it to college and, I went to college at Troy University and we had a lot of composers there. We had Ralph Ford, Rob Grice, and Robert W. Smith right down the hallway. So there was a lot of influence in that area as well as a lot of opportunities. They were all very open to letting students write music and then putting it in front of a live ensemble and letting you either crash or fail to kind of learn how it sounds. And so I got my first start with a live ensemble with the basketball pep band. Did a couple arrangements for them. Some of them were okay. Some of them were absolutely not. And I just kept at it. And then as we moved on, I went and talked to Ralph Ford and had him red pen up my stuff a lot. Mm-hmm. Then I got an opportunity to write for the marching band a little bit in their stands. And then I got more opportunities with their concert ensembles and their symphonic bands and stuff. Under Dr. Walker, who was my professor at the time. And he allowed me to write full concert band works. And then after...
Original music at that time?
Yeah, original music. So that was a cool little foray. And then, Ralph would take them and, beat them up. And I'd go and rehash. And then Ralph came to me one day and said, hey, you should send three beginning band charts and anything else you've written to this guy named Larry Clark.
Yeah.
So I sent my stuff to Larry Clark and he rejected all of it.
Sorry about that.
But he rejected it with and this is a good story, I think, for anybody. Yeah, you rejected it with a very long email that was very detailed, and it was detailed on every single piece.
Right.
And I went home that day. I talked to one of my mentors at the college, Dr. Blocker, and told him I was looking for a job at the time as a band director. And I was like, maybe since ninth grade, I kind of wasted my time. I said, maybe this just isn't for me and I need to focus on education. And I called Ralph and talked to him about it. And, he did the whole rejection's normal part. And I went home that weekend and I said, I'll do one of your edits and see what happens and send it back to you. So I went home and I picked one of the tunes and rehashed it, sent it back to you, and then there you go. It's all you wrote.
I liked it then?
Yeah, you said, we'll take it. And then you said, send me other stuff. And then it just rolled on from there.
And what piece was that?
That was Kinchi Stone Army.
Ah, yes, which... For the listeners out there that don't know, that is a piece that is a grade one, and it's on the Texas UIL prescribed music list. So pretty good first start.
Yeah, right.
And then you wrote a few other pieces that year that I really liked as well. But do you remember the other
few other pieces? Yeah, my first year was three. One was a piece I wrote for... an honor band that Ralph Ford did called Griffin.
Yeah.
It's a grade three. It was a quick little, you know, upbeat kind of piece in ABA. And then I wrote a piece for someone. His name was Trent Burkett. He did a summer music camp, and I wrote him a piece called To Be Found, which was actually Nelson Mandela had just passed away recently at that time. And I found a quote by him that was really inspirational. And I used that kind of as my inspiration to write that piece.
I think I've told you this before, but I've said it to other people. I think I even said it in a clinic recently that you were sitting at. I think that was when I realized that you had the ability to do this with that piece, or the Nelson Mandela piece, To Be Found, because it's super musical. It's lyrical. It shows a sense of, you know, you understand arch and drama and those sorts of things. So, you know, Griffin is a great piece too. I really enjoy that piece. But I think that was the first piece where I'm like, well, he has a musical sensibility that I think people are going to enjoy.
Well, that's good. It paid off.
So you mentioned a little bit about being a band director. Did you eventually then go into being a band director? Tell people about that.
Yeah, so my first gig was at a middle school in Mobile, and I was there for a year. And we had some decent little bit of success, but as you know, that first year out is absolutely terrifying and rewarding at the same time.
It's challenging, for sure.
It's very, very challenging. And so then I went and took over a high school band program. That's where I spent the rest of my teaching career, was at a high school. And I did get to work with the middle school kiddos that were across the street, because I was the only high school in the district. So I had everybody. And I spent my time there and, you know, did the usual stuff, budget, plan trips, manage all that jazz. Mm-hmm.
And obviously you should tell people then what's happened since you were 8 years at the high school.
No, four.
Four. Okay. And then what are you doing now? I know it, but they don't know it.
So. Well, my last year at the high school, I jokingly sent a publisher I knew a text and said, "Hey, is there any jobs opening up in the publishing world?" And later on at the end of that year, he came back and said, "Hey, I've got a spot at my new publishing company. Would you like to go?" And I thought to myself, I said, well, this is sort of like a dream come true, because my plan was that the composing thing was cool and fun, and it's something I enjoyed doing, but I figured I would have to do what most people do, which is work until I retire as a band director, and then I can kind of go out and do honor band gigs, and I can go and be the kind of quote composer guy. And I got offered that opportunity really early in life, and I jumped at it because it's a no-brainer. And so I am the instrumental music editor at Excelsia Music Publishing down here in Lakeland, Florida, started by you.
Yep.
For those that don't know, Larry Clark.
Well, we're really happy to have you. And it was one of the best decisions I've certainly made in my career to have you come on board. What's been great and share for the listeners is that, you know, I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of composers over the years, young and old. And, you know, only a handful of people come along that I've worked with that I, you know, when they're very young, that I can see that they have a lot of potential. And I've already told Tyler this, but another one of those was one of my students, which was Sean O'Loughlin. So I think Tyler's on a path to be similar in the success that, you know, Sean's had, and be somebody you should be really looking for more of his music in the future, for sure.
I appreciate that.
Well, it's well deserved. So talk to us a little bit about your process. You know, how do you sit down and say, I'm going to write a piece today? And, you know, what do you start with?
Well, that, you know, I get asked this one a lot. I'm sure you do too. And it's a hard one to answer. It changes for every single piece. And to answer your question on, I'm going to sit down today and write a piece. Oftentimes, if that's the case, it's because I have to. I've got a deadline.
Yeah, I'm a deadline composer too.
So, but I work fast. So sometimes I can sit down and just, you know, write a piece of music, and it's great because I don't have any interruptions in my thought process, and it just kind of, it makes sense the way the piece is going to lay out. And then other times I'll sit down and it'll take me a couple weeks. Like there's a piece we're going to talk about today that took me weeks and weeks to complete. But I don't really have a pictorial process or a sketching process or anything like that. Rarely do I ever start with any kind of musical idea. That does happen sometimes, but usually it's more of what kind, type, style of piece do I feel like writing? And then I sit down and write, unless somebody tells me what I have to write.
Right. Well, you mentioned that you're fast. How do you think you got to that point? Because for a lot of people, it takes time.
So I honestly think it goes back to arranging for the marching band in college and stuff like that. You know, I'd get a phone call at 10 o'clock at night that we've got homecoming tomorrow and we just can't decide on this chart. Write us a homecoming chart. We need it tomorrow. We need parts tomorrow. They needed everything. Yeah. So I would sit there and knock it out, and then I'd have parts and everything ready the next day and we'd read it. Or, you know, I get a quick marching band call from somebody that is in a bind and we're in July and they're about to have their camp and either something fell through or whatever, and they had to have it written. And I also found that people in general, when they ask you to do something, though they understand that there is a process and that you're creating something for them, everybody right. wants everything now. You know how the world's going.
That is the way the world is. Yeah.
So it is in my interest and everyone's interest to be quick. Now, you know, I had a professor one time that said, "Do you want it done quick or do you want it done right?" And my quip back to that is, why not both?
Right. Right, because there's a part of the process of writing music that's the skill of putting the notes down on the page or the computer or whatever. And if you can learn how to do that in a manner that's efficient, the musical ideas may be the hard part, but you shouldn't obviously have to be held up by the actual process of it.
Yeah, no doubt.
And yeah, my story is similar. Where when I first started working at Warner Brothers, we had to write arrangements really, really fast. And back in those days, they would give me a cassette and say, "Have this to us tomorrow." You know, same sort of story.
So that's nice. Cool. So you had to do everything by ear.
That's sometimes we might get a lead sheet, you know, for a new tune that was coming out or whatever, but not very often. So when you do sit down, what's like you mentioned finale. So you sit it down at the computer and write? Do you work at a piano first? How does that go?
Sometimes it's less glamorous than both of those. And I'm in my car and I get the itch to write something and I think, oh, this would be cool. And so I take my little phone out and I hit a record button and I sing some line into my phone and I think, okay, cool, I've got it. And I get home and I listen to that and I go, I don't know what that is. That's gibberish. It's just awful. And sometimes I just roll with it. Mm-hmm. So it all depends. I don't really have I'm not a good piano player. I can clunk out chords and I can clunk out a melody, but as far as doing it together, it's not very nice.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not unusual. I mean, doing these interviews, I've had a lot of the composers that write for Excelsior that, talk about they use the technology now. They get an idea where they're anywhere. They've got a recorder in their pocket, you know, with a phone, whether that's an iPhone or Android or whatever. And they just record themselves singing or talk through the process. So that's kind of the new way of, you know, people seem to be using the technology to their benefit. So do you write regularly on a schedule? Day, night, what works best for you?
So I thought after not being a high school band director and having oodles more time, which, you know, is not the case, but I thought that would make me want to write on a more consistent schedule. And it just hasn't panned out. I'm as sporadic and chaotic as I have ever been. I could pop out three pieces in a week and then not write a note for 3 months. You know, it just depends. It literally is the itch. Unless I have a deadline, it's whenever, however.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Because some composers do, you know, feel like they should write a little bit every day.
Yeah, it's, you know, I know Julie Giroux says she writes all the time, every single day, and, you know, it's practice. And I completely get that. I think maybe because I'm looking at music that we're working on at the company, mm-hmm. and delving into their orchestrations and stuff like that and reviewing that kind of stuff on a daily basis, I think maybe that fills the need. Because sometimes I get home and I don't want to think about music at all.
Right.
You know, so I don't know.
Now, do you feel like you've learned a lot from the other composers' music that you're working with?
Endlessly.
Yeah.
Endlessly. It's like, and I mean this in the most positive way, you learn what to do, how to do it, what not to do, how not to do it. And it's all this great melting pot of people working together, which is one of the reasons why I like working here, because it's not, it's a very back and forth between the composers and the editorial staff. And it's a lot of learning, because I've learned a lot of things from some of our composers who do things consistently a certain way, as far as notation's concerned or something like that, that I would have never thought about, that I think is neat. And I've incorporated that into my own music.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've been doing this for 20, 23 years, and every time I work on other people's music, I feel like it helps mine. And then especially when we do the recordings and you hear something, you go, man, that was just really good. I wish my music could be more like that.
You know, or man, Tyler, stop putting so many accents everywhere.
I may have said that to you a few times.
Oh yeah. Well, you live and you learn.
That's right. That's the truth. I asked all the composers on this podcast, you know, do you have ever issues with writer's block? Like you get partway through the piece and then you just can't seem to get past it. And if you do, you know, how do you get out of that rut?
Yeah, I don't know about other composers and how frequent this is, but all the time. And unfortunately, sometimes I can't get out. I'll write, you know, 2 minutes of a piece of music and go, I like this, but I have no idea where it should go. And sometimes I can push through and create something, and sometimes that works great. Sometimes I can't, and I just scrap it. I've got thousands of files of music on my computer that will never see the light of day. And in fact, every time I get on the computer, I put a little thing on Facebook that says, if I don't make it back from this trip, somebody find my computer and delete that hard drive.
That's hilarious.
And worse, I don't want any of those pieces to be released posthumously when there's no reason they should be out in the world. But to answer your question of how I break through it, a lot of times I have to make myself get up and go do something else, go do yard work, go listen to a bunch of music that is completely different than what I'm working on. You know, just mm-hmm. pop in my Aerosmith and just jam out for a couple hours and then walk away mm-hmm. and let my ears refresh. Because I think a lot of times, you know, playback on devices is great because you get to hear in real time kind of, you know, a sketch of what you're doing. But I also think I need to get away from that and listen right. to where the music should go.
Right. Yeah, it's an age-old problem that we all have to deal with composers. But I will share with the listeners that I've worked with a lot of composers, and I find it quite interesting that you're very willing to, I don't want to say throw music out, but you're willing to say, that's not going where I want it to go. Just I'll move on to something else. More so than I think anybody I've ever worked with.
Oh, well, hey.
So, I mean, self-editing is obviously, you know, pretty important for a composer. Us in publishing, we're lucky that we, you know, have editors who help us with that sometimes too. But I think you do a lot of that maybe more so than, like I said, other composers that I know.
I don't want to be married to something. And that's probably, I guess, less popular of an opinion among other composers, and no judgment at all. But I feel like since the majority of the music that I write is educational, you know, it's being used in Because, sorry, that's a whole other can of worms. All music's educational. I should point that out for everybody listening. All music at any level is educational. However, the music I'm writing, I know, is being geared more towards students in school learning how to be competent musicians. So I can't be married to something if it's not working. If it doesn't work for those musicians and what those directors are trying to teach, then it doesn't need to be there. As cool as it could be, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, so you mentioned you started in ninth grade. How has your process and how you compose music changed?
Well, I mean, in ninth grade, when I discovered the program, it was a lot. And in ninth grade, I was a sad little euphonium player. I didn't know anything about transposition or theory or anything like that. So I just kind of, I literally did what I think the nightmare scenario is for the older generation of composers. They think the younger composers are sitting there just plucking until they find something that works. And that is exactly the truth. That's what happened in ninth grade. I was plucking around just trying to see what works. And as I listened and played in ensembles and became more knowledgeable of theory and orchestration and stuff like that, it evolved. So I think, though, the search to try and figure out that program and how music was constructed and how it was supposed to look really gave me a step up. I mean, when I went to college and started my initial theory classes, they were talking about triads and scales and stuff. And I knew scales from high school, but as far as triads and basic theory, I had none of that in high school, but I had kind of taught myself by writing music. So that was a breeze. Mm-hmm. So I think starting out was really helpful for me. But as far as process, when I started, the program was the crutch. Now the program's a tool and the music is outside of the program, which I think is how it's supposed to be. I think you're supposed to be able to write music sans the program. But I think my reliance on the program when I was young is one of the reasons why I'm so fast, because the program I can just write it's all second nature now.
Right. Well, we've been lucky that we've grown up at a time when there is this technology.
No doubt.
And it certainly makes the process shorter from the the detail part of it, making parts and putting in dynamics and articulations and all that stuff. I mean, I did start out writing by hand, and boy, it took a very long time.
Well, I mean, Ralph Ford made us write everything by hand in our classes, because we took some basic orchestration and arranging classes. So I have had to write some things by hand. But as far as where I started, nope. Always had Finale or any other kind of music program.
Right. So Tyler, if people want to reach out to you and, you know, learn more about your music or commission you to write a new work or just be in contact with you, how can they do so?
So my idea about availability is that you should be able to contact me any way and every way you can, if nothing else, just to check in and say hi. So I've got my personal website, which is TylerRCarryMusic.com. And on there, you can contact me via a form, or I actually have a live chat that I check. It's 24/7. So if you type me hello on there, it'll pop up on my phone and I can answer questions in real time. You can also find me via the Excelsia website, ExcelsiaMusicPublishing.com. Mm-hmm. And my work email's there. So if you want to get in touch with me there, great. And I also believe you can find me on the back of the cover slips. There should be a scannable barcode you can use with your phone, and it'll send an email, and I'll get that email as well. Or you can do that. You can do that via a typed email.
So are you a social media person? Do you have accounts for those things?
Oh yeah. So I have an Instagram, which, you know, is full of bunny rabbits and cats, cause I have lots of animals at home. So I do sneak in some of my professional stuff on there, but for the most part, I mean, feel free to follow me and you can contact me there too. But that one, you will see lots of furry creatures. My Facebook, I have a professional Facebook page, Tyler R. Carey Composer. I post all kinds of stuff, and a lot of times I'll do some giveaways and events and stuff like that. You know, hint, hint, you can find that there. And that's pretty much pretty much my social media. I haven't gotten into Twitter yet. I haven't figured it out.
Well, I think probably directors are probably mainly more Facebook, and students who are listening are probably mainly more Instagram.
There you go.
Well, Tyler, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today about your music and your background, and we certainly do appreciate it.
It's been great. Thank you.
Well, that does it for another episode of From the Composer. I'm Larry Clark from Excelsia Music Publishing. Thank you for listening.